Welcome to the Aging Well Podcast. I'm Jeff Armstrong, here with Corbin Bruton. In this and the episodes that follow, we will share candid discussions on aging and hear from the experts. We are here to inform and encourage as we experience, well, aging.
In this episode, we interview Eric Newsom, the 2021 men's overall winner of the Race Across America, the world's toughest bicycle race. Eric is the first American to win the men's division since 2003 and the oldest person to ever win. His official time to cross the country, 3,037 miles, was 11 days, 19 hours, 28 minutes. He did this at 56 years of age. Eric, welcome to the Aging Well podcast. Let's begin by having you tell us a little bit about yourself.
So today I'm 58. When I made the decision to do the Race Across America, I had one of those kind of spiritual awakening, life awakening kind of things in 2014, where I just woke up January 21 in 2014 and just said, I've had enough of, you know, life as it was, the negative influences and stuff like that, and said I was going to change everything for the better. And I said, oh, by the way, for my 50th birthday, I'm going to take on the toughest bicycle race in the world. And up to that point, I was just, an average cyclist, you know, doing 100-mile rides and stuff like that, but nothing to the extreme of what I put myself into, which ended up being a 7-year journey from the decision to do the race till the fruition of crossing the finish line officially.
So when you said you had a spiritual movement, what inspired you to take on the challenge to racing across America?
A friend of mine had done the race the year before as a 2-person team. And so, I mean, I'd heard about the race and stuff like that, but nothing. I thought more of it was a team race, not an individual. And when I was following my friends along, I followed the individual journeys as well, because there were some pretty epic efforts that went on there. And wanting to be, ended up being on my third attempt and wanting to be one of the best cyclists in the world. And so the first two were kind of going through this mental journey that I was purging myself from a lot of stuff that had happened. And then for the 21 race, which ended up being the epitome of why I did it, was to see if I was one of the best cyclists in the world. And I was about 14 hours short of being the best. I was second overall in the 21 race across America.
So have you always had a passion for cycling, or is this something you picked up later in life?
I've always ridden, and part of the epiphany of, you know, I use cycling to deal with the problems that I had all along through life. You know, as more people use, you know, other types of things, smoking, drinking, drugs, whatever, when everything got bad for me, I got on my bike. So my bike was actually my sanctuary to deal with things. Went to France and chased the Tour de France in 2010. And when I got back, I said, I really like cycling. And there's a big, at the time I was living in Atlanta, Georgia, and there's a big cycling scene there. And I learned to transition from a bike rider to a cyclist and really got into the nuances of how to be a cyclist and enjoy it and get as much out of it as I possibly could.
Well, let's dive into that a little bit. How did you train for the 3,000-mile trek across America?
So it's, I mean, it, you know, a lot of people will know as cyclists what a 100-mile ride is. It's called a century. It's an equivalent of the marathon and running. And we built up to, I would do 100-mile bike rides daily. We would go to organize 100-mile or centuries in Atlanta. And our, when I got really well involved with it, our motivation was to do a century in 4 hours. And I would be with the lead group. And after I get done, I would go out and do the course again. And I didn't have a coach early on, so I was just kind of flying by the seat of my pants of learn how to train. You have to qualify for the Race Across America. You just can't sign up. So when I made the decision on January 21, in August of 2014, just 7 months later, I qualified, which there's different kinds of qualifications you need, but basically I had to do 400 miles in 24 hours. And my first, I did 416 miles in 24 hours as my first ultra cycling race. And, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes into as far as nutrition and hydration. You know, there's a lot of stuff on the bike. There's a ton of stuff off the bike that you have to know. And I had done a lot of reading and, you know, I was good cyclist, but nothing to where I eventually got to. So when you make the decision to do the race, you have to make a goal for the race, and from the goals will determine pretty much what your training regimen will be. I mean, if you just want to go finish, it's one thing. If you want to podium, it's another thing. If you want to set a record, it's another way of training. So the decision and the goals really dictate the type of training that you're going to do to complete this thing, which there's not been a lot of people in since 1982 to officially finish the race.
Can you elaborate a little bit on some of the other aspects of the training, the nutrition that was required, how you managed to be able to, you know, fuel your body to be going 400 miles in a day?
The first one I did was a Mid-Atlantic 24-hour race. I didn't know much about ultra nutrition and hydration and stuff like that, so we were just pumping in solid foods and waters and stuff like that. So, you know, getting ready for the Race Across America, you really have to, and I did, and for the 21 races, I worked with a nutritionist, I worked with a coach, and we really dialed in all the numbers, the specific numbers that you need to know when you're doing this kind of thing. And so when I hit the road in 21, I had a really good plan. The first two, I really didn't have a good plan. The first race, I've done the race, attempted it three times and finished it in 21. I didn't know much about it in the 15 race. And so, and I was on the verge of severe dehydration, malnutrition, and all those kind of things until I eventually pulled out in Indiana. When I did finish the 21 race, basically I took in 68 gallons of water and over 120,000 calories in a little over 11 days. And I trained myself with nutritionists to be able to intake that much and be able to perform at a very high level throughout the whole thing. So a lot of the nutrition was actually liquid based versus solid based, which is easier on the digestion system. So you're not, all your energy is not going towards trying to digest upwards of 13,000 calories a day. The body can modify where it's using the energy to go forward, go east, and take in the calories that you need to keep on going.
So what are some of the challenges you faced mentally and as well as physically in your cross country ride?
Well, when I got to Oceanside in 21, it was, first of all, it was the first post pandemic year. And so we didn't know we had a race until 6 weeks prior to the race even starting, due to the country opening back up. So that's one giant hurdle. And, you know, the Race Across America is dubbed the toughest bicycle race in the world for a reason. And then we put on COVID protocols on top of that. It made it really difficult. But we faced all those challenges. And so myself and my crew of 10, we're ready to go, but as we sat there in our rooms, getting ready to go for the start, we watched the temperature in the desert continue to rise. And so the first couple of days of the race, we were seeing air temperatures anywhere from 125 to 130 degrees a day during the day, and over 100 at night. And then it's, you know, when you're riding 20 hours a day, it's, that can wear on you, and it affected me to the point where I was actually in the ER in Cortez, Colorado, for a few hours because everybody thought I had rhabdomyolysis. which is pretty deadly. But once we got through that and my crew got in my face to continue on, then it just becomes doing what we normally do in the Race Across America, is just putting in a lot of miles every day.
What advice do you have for the listeners whose dream of doing something extraordinary, but they think that they're too old or they don't have the wherewithal to do it?
Well, you know, there's one of the things when I did my decision to do that, it was remove the limits that friends, family, society in general put on people. Age is, you know, we make a big thing. Some people make a big thing about the age thing. And when you get to 50, that you kind of have a toe on the ground and you're not going to be able to do much. When I finished the race, I was 56. And there are people older than me. There's the oldest person is 69 who's finished the Race Across America. So there's a lot of us who say age is just a number, and you get rid of the limits that a lot of other people put on you. And once you remove it and you set your brain in motion, it's more of a, you know, the reason that the older people do better with the Race Across America, late 30s, 40s, 50s or so, is the mental strength that we actually have to stay in a saddle for 20, 30, 40 hours, some of them go longer, to be able to keep pushing what people think their limits are. And something like the Race Across America, which is akin to like climbing Everest, the Iditarod, some of these epic things, you will push your limits. And you will be amazed, and I've been amazed at how far you can actually push the body. And the age thing doesn't really matter. You can do whatever you want. And the message is also to people younger than the, you know, 40s and 50s, that if you take care of your body, if you take care of your mental strength and stuff like that, you can do a lot of different things. You know, and I mean, the sky is the limit, really. I mean, it truly is. I mean, each one of us who finished the race in 21, unfortunately, it was only three because of COVID and travel restrictions. We were all in our 50s. And the last couple winners of the race have been in their 50s. So just take the age thing and then just throw it right out the window, because I don't, you know, I'm a believer that you can do whatever you want to. Don't let, and it's, you know, and I get that thing all the time about the age thing. It's like, no, I mean, you take care of yourself, you stay active, you keep moving. Yeah, it's a little bit difficult, and yeah, things hurt and a little bit more, and you're not a rubber band like you used to be and stuff like that. But I'm a living example. I'm just a kind of a normal guy who has a really good passion for cycling and push it to, you know, the toughest race in the world, the toughest bicycle race in the world.
So obviously you put a lot of time and effort into training for cycling. What else do you do to age well?
You know, the taking care of the body, the core of the body, and a lot of people think is just the abdomen, but the, you know, I worked with a really, really good holistic trainer after the 15 race who worked on my posture, worked on my core band, which is from basically just above the knees to the pectoral area and that entire area. And he also taught me about stretching on the fascia level, which a lot of people don't even know what the fascia level is, but the fascia is a connective tissue that runs the entire body. And if you are using that type of stretching and taking care of the body, limbering up the body that way, and doing strength training, which I was doing all these things, and in conjunction with the riding, the body is very resilient, and we can train the body at just about any age to do the things we want to do. It's, you know, the limits are, we can push past them. And there's a lot of people, and I have a lot of examples who people who do it, but they've taken care of themselves along the way. And that's the important part. And when you let your body get all tightened up and your posture's off and some other things go on, that's what keeps people from doing whatever the heck they want to go do out there.
So cycling, to the extent that you cycle, and the amount of time that goes into cycling and training and focus on the race, how do you maintain balance in those other areas of what we refer to as that kind of well-centered fitness, you know, the spiritual side, the intellectual side, emotional side, and social side. Obviously, those have got to take kind of a back seat. So how do you manage to balance that and still put in all the type of training you need to do?
Well, when I did the 21 race, I worked with a really good coach. So it was more regimented type of a thing. So I wasn't spending enormous amounts of time. I mean, yes, there were long rides, but I was out there in a more, you know, structured manner. And then working with, and for the 21 race, I actually allowed other people in to help me with the race. So the nutritionist, the coach, the mental training. I had a friend of mine who did the race in 21, and she sent me some really good mental resiliency type books to have some mental tools to draw off of during the training when things are hard, during the race when things are hard, spending time off the bike. I mean, I spent a lot of time of stretching, of core training, of weight training, of practicing, you know, different types of nutrition, what would work, what weren't. There's a lot of experimentation that went on, but also being grounded and spending time with my wife and my dogs here, and maintaining, you know, some semblance of a normal life while training for this extreme thing, which helped me be a more rounded person when I got to the start line in 21, which ultimately helped me during the entire event, because there was a lot of stuff that happened in the 11 days I was on the actual race course, that if I hadn't taken care of exactly what you talked about, I would have fallen apart at some point. So you have to be, you know, a very, like in the Tour de France and all those, they have the general classification rider who's, you know, ends up being the ultimate winner, who has all the really good, you know, they're really good with all the different cycling disciplines. As a solo rider of the Race Across America, we have to have all those same disciplines, but we also have to be able to ride at night. We have to have limited sleep. We have to be eating on the bike, you know, 18, 19, 20 hours a day. And I just did a talk yesterday about, you know, what keeps you going. Well, I mean, I'm riding across one of the most beautiful lands in the world. And each time I've done this race and gone across it, that's what I draw off. It was the beauty of this, of our country, that I get to ride across.
Did you have any moments in any of those races where you just kind of pulled the bike across to the side of the road and just said, what the F am I doing? I can't do this. I can't continue. And how do you push through that?
Yeah. I mean, the 15 race was, you know, I was a rookie and, you know, I was the kind of leader, the crew was around me, and then I started falling apart, and they kind of fell apart with me, and we kind of pulled the plug and didn't push through. The 16 race was much better, but I also have sleep apnea, and I wasn't wearing my CPAP machine properly, and so 180 miles from the finish, the crew pulled the plug on me and poured me in a van and drove me the rest of the 180 miles left. In the 21 race, I surrounded myself with a pretty good crew, and my lowest moment was in a gas station in Cortez after the hospital, and I was completely done. I mean, my body was wrecked, my brain was fried, I was late, I was slow, just a lot of bad influences going on at the moment, and I was ready to pull the plug. And then the crew came around me, and I talked about it in my interviews at the end of the race and several since. Several of them got in my face and said, there's plenty of time left on the clock. You're still in the race. You get on the bike and you work out whatever it is on the bike. You go east. And from Cortez, Colorado to Durango, yeah, I cried the entire way. And they threw me in a hotel for 90 minutes, got a shower, got in my Normatec recovery boots to help with the leg recovery. And then after 90 minutes, I was back on the bike and went from Durango, Colorado to the top of Wolf Creek Pass at over almost 11,000 feet, and then kept on going. So sometime, you know, in this environment, it's a supported race with a crew of 10, I had 10 fabulous people that I had met most of them along the way since my entry into ultra cycling. And each one of them filled a role, and they gave me some tough love in Cortez. And they showed me that they had belief in me, and then I started believing in myself. And then it just became all the regular stuff that we go through during this race, which is in and of itself is pretty epic. But having to deal with a trip to the hospital, which I did, and a couple other people did that year because it was so freaking hot. And then we were like, yeah, that was a pretty low moment. I was, like you said, I'm done with the bike. I'm ready to be done. And they wouldn't let it happen. They kept it going. So when you have a good team of people around you who believe in the goals and what you're about, when you hit those low moments, that's what helps you get through.
What's the most beautiful state that you've actually biked through?
Yeah. And again, I just did a talk this morning or yesterday morning about the beauty that we cross. You know, each one, I mean, there's 12 states that we cross, you know, California in their southern desert. People say desert, how can you, there's much beauty there. There's a lot of beauty in the desert there. Arizona, there's so much in Arizona because we go diagonally across it. It's really hard to say. It tries to kill me. And I mean, I did an interview when I crossed out of Arizona and Utah, where I said, I'm done with this state. I never want to go back and ride it again because it just literally tried to kill you. Utah, we're in Monument Valley, which if anybody's been through Monument Valley, it's just epic there. Colorado gets green. The mountains, the scenery gets better. The plains of Kansas. I mean, every state, you know, Kansas, now you're in the big farmlands and stuff like that, hard America. We cross the Colorado River from California to Arizona, the Missouri River, the Mississippi River. You know, those are epic places. You know, the farmlands of Illinois, Indiana, crossing the Ohio River, the last of the major rivers we cross into West Virginia, the Black Hills of West Virginia, the Appalachians, which are much older mountain range than the Rockies. And the epic beauty. I mean, there's an oil refinery in Illinois, which I found fascinating at night one time, you know, is all lit up. So there's not any one particular state that really stands out because each one is so unique and you could spend probably a lifetime in each one of those states just taking in everything that they're about. The course itself is just, I've been across it 5 times. And every time I do it, there's just something interesting and epic visually about every one of the states that I suggest everybody go see.
So what's next? You're not quite 60. You're still fairly young. What are you going to do to top this feat?
Well, I mean, I've been asked if I'd go back and do the race or what have you. Attempted it 3 times, finished it in 2021, with all the accolades I got and stuff like that came across with it. Physically I'm good, but I wanted to be the one of the best cyclists, and I was the best male cyclist in 2021, second overall, won a bunch of awards. Now it's just maintaining a healthy and sprint, you know, really kind of burning inside. And I wrote this long ago is I want to send the message that other people could do the same kind of thing, that, you know, you guys could do the same kind of thing. It's, I wrote earlier, long time ago, said, if somebody says I'm doing this because you did that, then that's pretty cool. When you know, to be inspired is one thing, but to inspire is pretty epic. And when people, you know, hear the story of some 56-year-old guy who went blasting across the country on his bicycle, and then they get up off the couch and they decide to do whatever it is they want to do. I never said to people or suggested to people, go do the race across America. But I said, do whatever it is you can do for yourself to maintain a healthy body, mind, soul, everything, to do whatever it is you want to do in life. And so that's you know, maintaining a healthy, enjoying Colorado now where I live, pretty epic state, and, you know, living, making a life, not just a living, but make a life, and sending a message to people that you can do whatever you want to do.
Eric, this has been inspiring, and hopefully you have inspired some of our listeners and those that you have. How can our listeners follow you? Do you have a webpage, social media?
Social media on Instagram and Facebook. I went by Team E-Ram because it is a team event. Even though I'm the solo rider, it's more about the team of people that I built around me to help me through this. And so Facebook and Instagram, I'm on LinkedIn, Eric Newsholm on LinkedIn. They can follow me there. Questions, answers, lots of pictures and videos along the way. There's also references off of the Race Across America. I mean, there's plenty of video that the Race Across America shot. So if you can just do a Google search on that, and you'll see some pretty epic stuff from the last few races that I did, along with what Race Across America is all about as well.
Eric, thanks for joining us on the Aging Well podcast. Today, you've taught us that age is just a number. So just don't even think about it. Throw it out the window. If you're inspired to have a Forrest Gump moment to run from coast to coast, then get up and do it. Seize the moment, take on a challenge, and overcome any obstacles that come in your way. We hope that you keep pushing yourself to the limit and keep aging well.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you benefited from today's podcast. And until next time, keep aging well.